Damas y caballeros, ladies and gentlemen, I am former WWE superstar Ricardo Rodriguez, and you are listening to the Gerwick Report here with Steve Gerwick and Frankie D.
It is Tuesday, January the 13th, 2015. I am Steve Gerwick of Gerwick.net, www.gerwick.net. Another edition of the Gerwick Report podcast. Today, a very special guest will be with us very shortly. But let's say what's up to Frank D.
All right, it's nothing up on my side, man. Let's get to the special guest.
Absolutely. And today we have a former WWE superstar, ring announcer, and manager. It is our distinct pleasure to welcome to the Gerwick Report podcast, Ricardo Rodriguez. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing good. I'm here in Orlando, Florida, my home, and I'm just excited for today. Excited for the interview.
Since your departure in the last couple of months, I know you've been doing some indie shows, making some appearances.
Yeah.
Kind of update us what's been going on since you left WWE.
Well, I wanted to basically clear the air on something. A lot of folks think that I got fired. I was never fired. I left under my own terms. So I just wanted to clear that out. And aside from that, man, I've been doing indie shows. I've been wrestling, which is basically what was a big issue and what led to my departure from the company, amongst other things. But aside from that, I've been wrestling. I've been thankfully all over the country, doing a lot of stuff in Puerto Rico. I got some stuff in Europe coming up. And next, I did Mexico, the AAA, and I got Australia coming up. So I'm keeping myself busy. I'm definitely keeping myself busy, and we have to, because, I mean, that's ultimately what we want to do. We want to be wrestlers, so we want to wrestle. And like they said, the struggle is real. So just keeping myself busy, definitely in wrestling around the country.
Well, let's start right there with your departure, because that would be the first question. And you wanted to, you know, clear the air that you were not fired, you were not released. You actually did request your release, and as I understand it, your contract was almost set to expire anyways. Can you talk about the reason?
No, I still had two years to go.
Okay.
Yeah, I still had time.
Did you have two separate contracts I was reading somewhere?
The way it works with a lot of guys when they first get brought up is they get their NXT contract or FCW contract, and then I was a different case just because I started on the road first and then got sent down to FCW. So I was a different case than most people. So most people, what they'll do is that they'll have their developmental contract, and then anything that they work extra, if they say, for instance, you know, like the last couple of months they've been bringing in guys like Neville, Sami Zayn, you know, Dissension to work the live events, you know, Charlotte, they'll bring in guys from the FCW, NXT to work the live events on the road, so they get something extra aside from their developmental. So I was different, because I basically had my developmental and then my on-the-road contract, the main roster. Granted, my developmental wasn't anything spectacular, nothing that I wanted to say I was proud of, but it was a little extra chunk of change that was in my pocket. But it was, my main thing was my on-the-road, my main roster contract. That was what was paying my bills. And like I said, the developmental was just a little extra that was given to me because I was never there. I was always on the road. So I was different than most people, a lot different. And how I started and how I came up. For a bit, I technically had two contracts.
Okay. So let's clear the air then. What happened with WWE? Why exactly did you request your release when you did?
Obviously, they weren't doing anything with me. I had pitched ideas, and I wasn't getting any feedback. So creatively, they weren't doing anything with me. Granted, I was doing the Spanish broadcast. I was doing like the backstage interviews in Spanish for Latin America, for Mexico, and the Spanish-speaking countries that WWE catered to. So I was doing that, and it was great. But once the show started, like, I wasn't doing anything. Like, I was just sitting there. So there was that. I was doing the Spanish announce team on the pay-per-views, but that was once a month. So creatively, they weren't doing anything with me. And then financially, it wasn't to my benefit to even go into work, honestly, because if I take consideration what I was making on the road versus how much I was spending, you know, hotels, cars, food, gym, you know, having to buy a tuxedo every so often because they would get beat up and destroyed at a live event or whatever. It wasn't to my benefit to even go in, honestly. I was probably better off just staying home and getting, you know, my salary. So there was a lot of that that was going on, and just clashes. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, you know, WWE took care of me. They took care of my family, and I owe them a lot because of that. But towards the end of my run, they just weren't doing anything with me. And once, especially once the big releases happened, like, I started kind of thinking, hey, you know, I'd rather leave on my own terms than have them call me and say, hey, we have nothing for you. We're wishing, you know, the best in future endeavors, yada, yada, yada. So a lot of it was just a lot of creative and then financial stuff that kind of led to my departure from the company. I mean, and then actually Punk mentioned it once in his pipe bomb in Vegas, where we're all a spoke in the wheel. So if one breaks off, you know, the wheel's going to keep turning. So like I knew that if I left, I wasn't going to be basically missed in the sense that they couldn't go on without me to say, because I mean, I was just, you know, doing the backstage stuff. So it wasn't like I was in a major role. And at the time, I felt like I could do more on the outside and independence, you know, maybe head down to Mexico for AAA or CMLL, which I was in talks. I'm actually very close with one of the promoters down in CMLL. So for a while, like myself and even Alberto, we had talked about, you know, leaving just because they weren't doing anything with us, with either one of us. And especially myself, they weren't doing anything with me. So like I was in a position where I could leave if I wanted to, because they weren't doing anything with me. And I felt like I could do more elsewhere on the outside. So that was basically kind of what happened and why I decided to leave.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this question. Was there any talk whatsoever, since you had already been doing the stick with Del Rio as his personal ring announcer, was there any talk of maybe putting you on the road as a full-time ring announcer with WWE?
No, there was never really talk about that. As far as the new office that kind of came in, like, I don't think they were too fond of myself, for whatever reason.
The new office, who would that be?
The new writers, you know, like the new office that kind of came in that's taking over right now is the authority.
So the Triple H administration.
I just felt like they weren't, I don't know, like I felt like they just kind of shut me away, when they took over fully, and then for whatever reason, I don't know. I'm sure I know I've made mistakes, you know, just because I didn't know any better. And you know, for what it was, I mean, for whatever mess, you know, mistakes I made, that they kind of still kept me around, which I'm grateful for. And I don't know, like, it was just, they never really talked to me about becoming a full-time ring announcer, you know, in that sense. I pitched ideas of putting me with other guys. For the longest, I told them, I had told Office to put me with Ascension down in FCW or NXT, especially since I'm the one that started them. I created Ascension. Like, that was my original idea back in FCW when we had five of us back then. And then eventually, Shaw Duro was in it, and she went in her own way. And then, like, Epico ended up teaming with Primo, so he ended up getting away. And then the whole thing, unfortunately, with Kenneth Cameron happened in St. Petersburg. So that kind of broke that apart. And then so little by little, they started chopping him down. But, I mean, because they started doing their own thing, which, you know, good for them. It worked out for most of them. But, they never really talked to me about being a full-time ring announcer. Like I said, like, I pitched ideas, but they either will get shut down or I just never get a feedback. As of to yes, maybe, okay, let's try this way and see if we can work it in. So that was pretty much it. Like that, I was just kind of stuck in limbo, where I don't know when the last week I was going to be there. You know, when was the last day I was going to be hired by the company? Just because I never got feedback. They never told me much of anything. and then injuries happened, and I just wasn't happy for whatever reason, you know, for many X reasons that that I was there. I just, they weren't doing anything with me. I mean, that's ultimately what it comes down to, aside from the financials, was they weren't doing anything with me.
When you guys were there, you and Del Rio came in originally on the SmackDown side and played all those vignettes about Del Rio was the Mexican aristocrat and whatever. And, you know, for me as a fan, I didn't like that the initial, when he first came in, how the character was going to be, because we had just saw that with JBL. Kind of the same kind of, I mean, I looked at Del Rio as basically the Mexican version of the Million Dollar Man, you know.
Right. No, definitely, yeah. Definitely. Definitely. And then there was a picture that when Ted DiBiase came in one day, there was a picture they took. It was DiBiase, JBL, Del Rio. And it was just one of those things where, you know, like I think JBL posted it once. The irony in it.
Yeah.
I actually wasn't even with the company when those vignettes came out. Like I had a tryout, an actual wrestling tryout on a Monday, the Monday after SummerSlam. And then that Tuesday, we did the whole ring announcing thing. So I was just basically an extra that I just happened to fill the spot that they needed. And then they just kept me from there. So, like, I wasn't even aware because I was doing the independents and, you know, I was one of those, like, the release sucks and all this sort of stuff, right? So I was in that mode. So when I got my tryout, the email for the tryout, I started kind of watching just so I was familiar with what was going on because I hadn't been watching WWE. At all, like all I knew, because at the time it was like, this is like when TNA and the exhibition and all that stuff, you know, was like the hot topic, and you know, obviously the Ring of Honor, the Japan stuff, the Mexico stuff. That's what I was watching. So I wasn't too familiar with what was going on WWE TV. So when I got the email like two weeks prior to the actual trial, like I started watching it, and I saw that promo. I saw one of those promos, and I didn't think anything of it, honestly. I was like, okay, cool, new characters, you know, like, I don't know what's going on. So then we do the tryouts, and then they basically asked me if I can do this ring announcing thing. I was like, yeah, sure, I'll go, which was in Bakersfield. The next day was in Bakersfield that we did the tryout, the debut, because the actual tryout was at the Staples Center in L.A. So they had asked me if I can go to Bakersfield the next day, and then on that Wednesday, because I think SmackDown was going to like Australia or something the next week, so they couldn't film SmackDown that following week. So we did Tuesday, Wednesday taping of SmackDown in Fresno. So I did that, and then I started getting familiar with the character and what he was doing. And I mean, at first I wasn't too sure who he was. I knew I'd seen him before, but I actually met him. I met him that Tuesday. I met Del Rio that Tuesday. And then I hit up my buddy, and I go, he's a huge like wrestling nerd. So I told him, I was like, hey, look up this guy. Who is he? I know I've seen him before. I just can't remember his name, his actual like working name. So then he told me he was Los Gatos Jr. And I was like, oh, shit, that's awesome. Sorry, you're going to have to censor that. I was like, oh, that's awesome, blah, 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 blah. But when he came in, I actually liked it in a way that he wasn't your typical like stereotype of a Mexican that you would see normally. On WWE, it wasn't the Mexicals, you know, which, you know, was very stereotypical.
Right.
He actually came in as royalty, like you know, this bloodline of this Spaniard, you know, Cortez or whatever. So it was a little different. So in a sense, I was open to the idea. And not only that, because he had a ring announcer myself. So it gave me something to do. So I can see what you mean and where you're coming from. But just because it was a little different than what we were used to seeing when it comes to, let's say, you know, a person portraying a Mexican character, it wasn't your stereotypical character. So it was a little different. So in a sense, I kind of enjoyed it. Well, because like I said, because it gave me something to do. But it was different. It wasn't your stereotype of what a Mexican character would be under NXT.
Very, very, very true. Yeah, the Mexicans came in, and that was... That was crazy when I saw that. I was actually there the night in Bakersfield. It was at Robo Bank when Del Rio made his debut that night. So, yeah, I remember that. It was a SmackDown TV taping. I remember that. And the thing that I can see the problem that happened in WWE with you guys is the moment that they turned you babyface. That
they could have been done differently.
Yeah, absolutely.
Way differently. as opposed to just a one night, you know, at a pay-per-view. Thankfully, in a weird way, the actual turn kind of worked, but what followed afterwards, I didn't necessarily agree with how they did it. I think it was just kind of forced down people's throat, and I wasn't too fond of that. It could have been done a whole lot different, especially coming into like the predominantly Latino states, you know, your Texas, your Arizona, New Mexico, California, because we were coming up in that area. Instead of starting it in, say, New York, we could have started it, you know, in Texas or, you know, Arizona or California. We could have started it there and, you know, progressed in that sense from there, since we're in the predominantly Latino community. So it could have been done a whole lot different than what they did.
You know, you've been clearing up some misconceptions with your contractual status with WWE, your release. There was one report I saw that there may have been some problems with your weight. Was weight ever an issue with you in WWE?
It was, you know, and they would do this, and just like how they did with Vicky, they wouldn't tell her. They would just kind of start doing promos and then just kind of throwing it there. I'm not going to lie. Like, yeah, I'm bigger. I'm bigger than most people, but, I mean, I can still move. I can move a lot better than most of the guys that are even there right now. Hell, like, if there are so many things on that substance list that you can't take, that, I mean, they would have helped a lot. Now, I'm not saying steroids, but just like stuff you can buy at GNC, you know, but just because they're on that stupid list that you can't take it, you know, you can't, like, and it's hard. And most of the guys will tell you that, like, it's hard to maintain a proper diet when you're on the road, just because when you're done from SmackDown, or I'm sorry, from Raw, you have to drive to SmackDown 5 hours, four or five hour drive. What's the only thing that's open? Either a gas station or McDonald's. So obviously you buy a cheeseburger, you just eat the meat. So it's, yeah, you know, like, I could have done better. I honestly don't want to put the blame all on them, because it was myself as well. I could have done better when it came to the diet. I could have. So that's shame on me. Shame on me. But, like, I was still doing everything they had asked me. You know, like, hey, can you come in and work with this guy? Okay, cool. Because they knew that I can make him work and I can make him move. And not only that, I can make their stuff look good. And I'm totally blowing myself up right now. But I know what I'm capable of, and I know that even, you know, at 230, like, I still do a bunch of stuff that a lot of the guys who are, you know, 200 pounds can't do. I know that. So I could have done better. I also put the blame on myself. I could have done better. But I think a lot of it was just I got comfortable. So that was shame on me.
Well, that's definitely an honest answer. And then another thing I had read was you're not the original choice to be Del Rio's personal ring announcer. Is that true?
Right.
And who was the original choice?
There was the way that we did the tryouts. It was basically we did like man in the middle for like an hour, where the person's in the middle and everybody just basically beats the crap out of them. So I stayed in as long as I could. From there, we ended up doing matches. There was maybe 12, 16 of us. So we started doing matches. And it was basically in the way the way they did it was kind of tournament style. So they would take two guys, and then pick one from each match and kind of pit them up against each other. And at the end, it was myself and this guy. His name was Mercurio Jr. From San Bernardino. And we did that. Okay, cool. Whatever. We did the match. We're in catering. The show started. This is my first time there, so I'm just following everybody else. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just kind of following everybody else. So everybody just kind of hangs out at the catering. Okay, cool. So they go up to Mercurio Jr., and they had asked him if he can do this ring announcing thing on that Tuesday. For whatever reason, he said he couldn't make it to Bakersfield, for whatever reason. So then they go to Jesse Hernandez, who's the one that got me my booking, who got me the tryout, and then he basically says, well, you know, this guy speaks Spanish. So then they came up to me, and then they asked me if I can do this thing in Bakersfield, which obviously I said yes. I was only scheduled for that Monday. So I ended up going, doing the whole re-announcing thing on Tuesday and Wednesday, and then that was it.
So
thank you to the other guy for saying no.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned Jesse Hernandez there. Did you actually, did you train at the School of Hard Knocks in San Bernardino?
No. I had met him once prior. I mean, I had met him before, like, at random shows, but I had only worked with for EWF once prior. before he had asked me, because he had asked me about the tryout that same day that I worked for him the first time. And he had come in and he had told me that WWE was coming to town. They were looking for masked lucha guys. He had asked me if I can do it, if I want to do it, which obviously I was like, yes.
Right.
So I owe Jesse a lot because he didn't have to do that. Like, he didn't owe me anything and vice versa. It was just him. He saw something in me, thankfully, and then he had asked me if I wanted to do the trial, which I did, and it paid off for both of us.
So let me ask you this question. When you came into WWE, obviously Triple H was there with Stephanie, but did you come in with the administration being with, it was more Vince hands-on?
At the time, yeah. Yeah, at the time it was more Vince, more John Laurinaitis. I dealt more with Laurinaitis and Mark Carano in talent relations than I did actually with Vince, especially in the beginning. Because I'm brand new, I'm not going to go and, hey Vince, how's it going, buddy? You know,
right.
It doesn't work that way. So I'm brand new, so I dealt more with John Laurinaitis. He was head of talent relations and Mark Carano. This is before Triple H and Stephanie kind of, took over. At the time, it was more just, Laurinaitis and Carano that I dealt with.
Okay.
Not as much Vince at the time.
And when Laurinaitis was there with his administration, and then Triple H comes in, Trips comes in, and he's with Stephanie. What do you notice the differences there between Laurinaitis and Triple H?
I can't really pinpoint one specific thing. It was more so just like the whole thing just kind of changed the vibe, just kind of changed. And I've said this before. Like I understand in a way. I understand in a way that. And the way I said it before was, like, when the new president comes in, he gets rid of the old cabinet and brings in his own. That's just the way it is. So we saw a big change in personnel of who was in charge, of who was there. They kind of got rid of the older guys, and that's why they got rid of Laurinaitis as far as talent relations. And then they brought in this lady, Jane Gaddis, which she was still learning. I think she comes from the golf, the women's golf, I think. I think that's what she was coming from. So the new office kind of came in, and there was a big change because, most of us were hirees from John Laurinaitis, not so much, from Kane Seaman or Triple H. We weren't their hirees. We weren't basically their boys. So if you look at it from that perspective, it sucked because it kind of pushed a bunch of us, to the back so he can come in and bring in his own guys and make his own stars, which to a point, I get it. It just sucked for us.
Right.
Because we were just kind of like, okay, now you stand in the back, let me make my own stars. I like I said, to a point, I get it. It just sucked for a lot of the guys.
So when Trips came in into power, did you kind of, because at the time when this happened, I'm assuming you were still with Del Rio. Did you guys notice your push going down a little bit, and then this was the movement. Oh, we got an idea for you guys. We're going to turn you babyface.
Yeah. That will see. Here's from my understanding from what Del Rio had told me, because this conversation wasn't involved in this conversation. It was more so just Del Rio and the office
Right. Where
they basically, because I think they were opening up like a new branch in Latin America. So they needed somebody, right? And then Ray was hurt, so they basically needed somebody to kind of be the face of Latin America when it comes to this, because of all these business deals that they were doing. This is from my understanding. So that's partially why they turned as babyface, just to kind of have Del Rio as the guy in Latin America, which, I mean, in a sense, he already was between him and Rey Mysterio. Like, those were the guys that they would use for a lot of the promotional stuff down in Latin America. So, and I said, this is all just from my understanding. They needed to turn Del Rio babyface so he can become that guy in Latin America. Like I said, it could have been done a lot differently than how they did it, as opposed to just rushing it and then, like I said, just throwing it down people's throats. It could have been done a whole lot different. But from my understanding, like I said, that's what it was. They just needed to turn a babyface to have somebody for these new branches that they're opening up, these new business deals that they're opening up in Latin America, from my understanding.
From your perspective, obviously you've seen the regime change there, going more from Vince to Triple H now. Exactly how much power does Triple H have in that company? We know, as far as, you know, it's still Vince's company. He's always going to be around. But have you seen more and more that Triple H is taking charge? He's making decisions in the day-to-day operations?
Yeah, no, definitely. And you know, some good, some not so good. He's very involved in the matches. He's very involved in the whole show. Whereas Vince back then was more involved in the important angles. Obviously, he wouldn't bother with something like on Superstars, you know, I mean, man, like, he would leave that to the agents. But if there was a big angle that they're doing, Vince was very involved in that. Whereas Triple H is more involved in the whole show overall. And I don't know how he does it, but, like, I mean, it could even be, like, way too saturated for him sometimes where it's too much. It might be. But I mean, yeah, no, like, I mean, for what it is, despite my feelings towards, you know, him on certain levels, on certain things, like, he's involved in a lot of things. He would help out a lot of the guys, and you see his influence a lot throughout the show. There's a lot of stuff that he's bringing back that you haven't seen in a while. You know, certain rules that, like, you know, 3 years ago, you know, we weren't allowed to do. Now, you know, they can go back and do it. When was the last time you saw, you know, aside from the Ryback stuff, when was the last time you saw, like, extras, you know, in a match on Raw? You know, like, what they're doing with Ascension. They're bringing in these extras, which, to me, it's awesome because it gives them an opportunity to be in front of a camera. But yeah, no, like, you know, Triple H is very involved in a lot of things. And then, like I said, Vince was more so just on the main angles, on the main things, on the main events. That's where Vince was very involved. And then just the mentality that they have for the business and for what they're doing. Like I said, some good, some bad. I didn't watch Raw yesterday because I train on Monday, but I was reading the Twitter comments, and apparently it wasn't that great. I don't know. I haven't watched it in a while, but like Triple H is very involved. If he's still doing what he was doing back when I was there, he was very involved in all the matches. And he'll throw his little twist, you know, and things, which is a different flavor. Just not many people might like it.
Well, let me ask you this question real quick. Okay, you were there when, you know, obviously Trips, you know, we're talking about Trips and his team coming in. Okay, now the conception is that Triple H is the one that's down there running NXT. That's his baby.
That's his baby.
Okay, so. I watched the NXT special, you know, the R Evolution special, and then you look at that and it was like, man, that was a show of 2014. Then you look at Raw, and it's all Vince. Obviously, I mean, you worked there. I mean, there's a huge difference between the two. Am I?
No, definitely. But see, here's the difference though. I haven't watched anything WWE in a while. Right. I mean, I know what's going on because of Twitter comments. I'll read what's going on. But I haven't watched anything, but I've heard a lot of good things about it. But if look at who was on that event, you know, a Generico, Pac, Kenta, Devitt, you know, Samoa Del Sol, you know, looking Sin Cara, you know, these are guys that were indie guys.
Right.
These were indie guys. Like, I don't know. I'm trying to think of that pay-per-view. How many of those guys were actually guys that WWE created, aside from maybe Charlotte? You know, everybody else was indie.
True.
Charlotte, I think, was the only one on that whole pay-per-view that was straight-out NXT person. Everybody else were indie guys. So, I'm trying to go back on in my head and, you know, think of the matches. But if I'm not mistaken, yeah, like, Charlotte, I think, was the only one that was like straight-out NXT, FCW. Everybody else were indie guys. So that's a big difference.
Yeah, this was a debut of Kevin Steen came in that night, and it was Adrian Neville versus Sami Zayn for the NXT Championship. That was the main event.
Yes.
So it was very good.
Yeah, and then, like I said, most everybody else, you know, were indie guys. Even the Ascension, those guys were indie guys. You know, or if not that, they're guys that have been there for a while, so they already know how it works and what they want. Other than that, yeah, everybody was indie. So there's a big difference between that and then what's on WWE TV right now. Granted, a lot of the stuff that you saw on that pay per view you will never see on WWE. And I used to bitch about this too back when I was a fan. Oh man, well in the Indies this guy was doing this, and then 3 years ago he was doing this. Okay, now that I've been there, I understand. The travel schedule that they have them on, there's a lot of stuff that you're like, I don't want to even try that. My body's all beat up. And not only that, if I get hurt, I'm off TV, I'm off, the road, and I'm going to be losing money. So in a way, in a sense, they're playing it safe for their own safety, because, hey, if you get hurt, if you're off and you're not getting paid, so not only that, the wear and tear of the road will beat you up a lot more than the actual matches. And that's something that I didn't understand until I got there. The wear and tear of the road will kill you a lot more than what you're doing in the ring. Because we can do a short, headlock, shoulder tackle, drop down, leapfrog, drop kick. But because my body's so beat up, on that tackle, I could get hurt, even though it's something simple. But just because your body's so beat up from being on the road, that those are the little things that people don't get sometimes. The guys from NXT, yeah, don't get me wrong, like the training regimen that they have them on is incredible. It's insane. It's like the stamina that they, and I said before, the stamina that they have is amazing. But they're not doing the traveling. They're doing their the live events here in Florida, but they're not doing okay, let's fly from here to California on a Friday night or a Friday morning, do the show, drive 3 hours to the next town, wake up, go to the gym. From there, go to the arena. So they're not doing that yet. And that's something that a lot of the guys down here don't get sometimes. Like, oh, yeah, well, I can out-wrestle the guy that's on TV right now. Okay, yeah, but you're not doing the travel schedule that they're doing. And the travel schedule is a lot worse than the actual wrestling. And that's something that I didn't get until I got there, until I did it.
Can you talk about the WWE creative process? I mean, that's something that's talked about a lot on social media is – exactly how many writers do they have? What's the process? Do you have any input or any influence on your storylines, your character, etc.?
So we're subconscious way, like if they gave you something, okay, because here's the thing, they can give you the script, right? But it's up to you to read it. It's up to you to act it out. So if you do something in particular that okay, maybe they didn't mean it to be this way, but it came off this way, a certain way, and then they like it, they're going to run with it. So in a weird subconscious way, you do have some kind of a sense of creative direction in a way. I'll put myself in this example. Like I was, and I've said this before, I was just a ring announcer. Like I wasn't told to do anything else, but I think that the character in a sense, just because like I would watch a lot, and I've said this before, I would watch a lot of silent movies or Kevin Smith, Jay, Silent Bob, because Kevin Smith never talked. He was always in the background just making faces. And I think with that, the writers kind of got into it, and they started putting me in certain situations where all it was just facial expressions. That's all I had to do. And that's kind of what got the character in itself over, because I didn't wrestle. I wasn't wrestling, so I can't get over that way. I mean, the top, for the longest, the top heels in the company were all characters. They weren't wrestlers. It was like Vicky, it was Stupid Computer, and it was Michael Cole. Those three were the top heels of the company for a good while, even though they didn't even wrestle. But it was all character. So, and that's something that if you do something well, they give you something, and you do it well, the writers will keep going, or Vince will push for something more along the lines of that. I'll put this in as an example. The first time that Torito and Hornswoggle wrestled, it was just a one-time thing. But because they did such a good job, they kept going with it. And then it ended up leading into that, a TLC match or a ladder match, whatever it was, which was incredible. It was great. So in a weird way, you do have some kind of a say just because of how you act it out or how you do something, whether you do it really poorly or you do it really well. As far as the creative stuff, it's a revolving door, unfortunately, with a lot of the writers. Just for whatever reason, it's a revolving door. There are very few that stick around and stay there. A lot of the writers come in within a month, 2 months, 3 months, they're gone. because they leave, they quit. So it's a revolving door. And the only problem that I would have with that sometimes is they'll bring these guys who have no concept of wrestling. So it would show when they would come up to you and ask you certain things or tell you, okay, hey, for your promo, you're going to be doing this. When you're reading it, you're like, I would never say that. Like, what the hell is this? Like, you have no concept of who this character is. I would never say that. And I'm not saying that with me. I'll say that with other guys, like, because I would hear their reaction, where they would just kind of read it and in their mind they're like, the f*** is this? So that was an issue sometimes with some of the writers, that they had no concept of wrestling or who the characters were. But then that's when people kind of come in and rewrite some of the stuff, and all you have to do is be like, oh, I forgot, I was just ad-libbing, you know, and just kind of cover your ass that way. But yeah, it was a revolving door sometimes when it came to the writers.
How frustrating is that? I mean, you, of course, train and you take bumps in the ring, and you've been around, and you have other guys in the business, you know, backstage that have been at WrestleMania on the biggest stages in the wrestling industry. And here's this little 28-year-old writer backstage who thinks he's the greatest thing in the world, and he's like, hey, here's an idea I have for you guys. And he knows nothing about professional wrestling. I mean, how frustrating is that, like, professionally for you to work with somebody like that?
I didn't have to deal with it as much as, like, let's say, Alberto or some of the other guys, because, like I said, my character never really talked much. Aside from the, you know, the introduction and all that stuff, like, I never really talked. So I didn't have to deal with it as much, maybe once or twice. But other than that, it was more so like Alberto or you know, like I said, some of the other guys. And I can see the frustration in the face where you, like, they're looking at the script, they're looking at the guy, they're looking at the script, they're looking at the guy, and you can just tell that they want to cut them out. Because, like, obviously what they gave the writer or what they gave the wrestler, like, is not anything that the wrestler would even say ever or would even ever do. So I didn't have to deal with it as much, but I would see the frustration in some of the other guys. Yeah, it was some of the stuff was creative, but it doesn't mix with the person that they're trying to do the skit or the segment with. And like I said, that's where a lot of the guys would just kind of, like, make up stuff or, like, ad-lib. And switch out the promos. That's what they would come in and take direction on their own. But yeah, I can see the frustration in some of the guys sometimes.
So right now we have a situation going on in WWE where Roman Reigns is supposed to be the next big superstar, the successor to John Cena. And right now they have Roman Reigns out there saying a lot of stupid stuff. One of them we were talking about on our show yesterday, they had him say suffering succotash. He's going to beat the suffering succotash out of Seth Rollins. And we're understanding that supposedly Vince McMahon is the one who's scripting Roman Reigns' promos. What do you think about that, as far as, like you just said, it'd be creative people coming up with stuff and they don't really know the character? I mean, it's kind of like I heard Kevin Nash say when he was doing his deal with CM Punk a few years ago. He said that a writer came up to him and he says, well, I'm going to, not necessarily knowing what all the stuff that Nash did at WCW, he says, I'm going to write a promo off of what you did as Diesel. And that's why people said Nash didn't have, good promo skills anymore. I mean, what do you think about that, as far as maybe being out of touch?
Like I said, I haven't been watching, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Like I said, all I know is what I read, like, on Twitter, the comments, because I find that amusing sometimes.
Yeah.
And like I said, I train on Monday, so, like, I don't even bother DVRing it. But I don't know. It might, I mean, I don't know. I don't know. It might be them messing with Roman. I honestly don't know. Yeah, I can't tell you because I have no idea.
Yeah,
I know with Alberto, like, Vince was very into Del Rio's promos, like writing it, or, like, you know, like, if there was an issue, like I said, that Del Rio wasn't too comfortable saying something because of language barrier or accents or whatever, you know, he would ask me for something that stood for the same thing, or he would go to Vince and say, hey, you know, is there something, another way we can say this, because, you know, like I said, because of accents or, you know, just language barrier or whatever.
Right.
or it was a word that, like, you know, when the hell were you ever used that in real life, kind of a thing.
Right.
So I like, as far as Roman, I honestly don't know. He looks the part. He looks great. I know I used to work with him a lot when he was on FCW. I know his wrestling ability in a sense is limited, because he didn't learn wrestling until he got here. Yeah, and it's in his bloodline with the Usos and, you know, The Rock and all them. But I mean, so long as he sticks to what he's doing now, like, I think it'll work out. But as far as promos, I have no idea because I haven't been watching, so I don't know.
Is there any importance on the ratings anymore? I mean, we've of course come from an era where it was WCW versus WWF, and, you know, Tuesday afternoon would come along and you just couldn't wait to see if Nitro beat Raw or Raw beat Nitro.
Right.
I mean, these days, is there any importance on the ratings? Do they ever talk about, hey, let's try to boost the ratings, or this is good for ratings, or do you feel like there's any real importance on ratings anymore?
The only time that I would recall that they would even, like, try to put on something good was Mania time. That was always, like, Mania season was always when they were trying, you know, their hardest to put something out there. But, I mean, if you look at it, like, what competition does WWE have, honestly? You know, production-wise, you know, and you know, superstar power-wise, you know, like, what competition do they have? They really don't. I mean, I think the only thing that, and I don't watch American football, but, I mean, on Mondays, you know, you have football. I think that would be the only thing that would even, like, compete as far as ratings go on a Monday. And then you have SmackDown now on Thursdays, which Impact airs on Wednesdays, right?
They're moving to Friday.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, yeah, see, that's out of touch I am when it comes to the main stuff. So, yeah, they don't have competition. Unfortunately, I don't know. I hope it works out for TNA. I don't know how this new move to this new station, Destination America, I don't know how it's going to work out for them, just because obviously it's not Spike. It's not, like, not everybody has it. So we'll see how it works out for them. I like to say, I wish them the best, just because it would always be nice to have a competition and another place to go to if in case one doesn't work out.
Right.
As far as ratings go, like I said, I don't see any competition for WWE, honestly, production-wise. You have amazing wrestling, you know, when it comes to Ring of Honor, but they're still, you know, like, in their infancy. And then I hope it gets to a point where they get to a major station or, you know, something big that could potentially become an actual competitor to WWE, which, like I said, at the time, there is none. There's no competition.
Right. Let me ask you this question. Listening to CM Punk's comments on the Colt Cabana podcast, he mentioned the WWE Network and mentioned nobody knew the pay structure of how you guys are going to get paid as far as
pay-per-views
and all that type of stuff. So I was going to ask you your thoughts on the WWE Network as of today, and what was the internal feeling when they were talking about launching this, and then how WrestleMania was going to go from being $60 all the way down to
$9.99. Punk, he was right. Like, they didn't really tell us much of how it was going to work out. It was more of just like, hey, just hang in there. Everybody's going to be taken care of. Everybody's going to be fine. Which, once we got those pay-per-view paychecks, we're like, wait, oh no. Mm. So, yeah, once we got those pay-per-view paychecks, we were just like, oh, that's not what we were hoping. Yeah, I'm sure they kept the top guys happy for the most part. So long as you keep the top guys happy, everybody else, they can't really bitch or complain.
Right.
You know, so, as far as we went, like, we didn't know much of anything. The actual idea of a network, that's awesome, you know, because I have at the finger at my fingertips, I can watch whatever match I want. That has been WWE, IWA, WCW, ECW, all that other stuff. So I can watch whatever match, and it's all available, which is great. So the concept itself is awesome. The pay structure, not so much for the guys.
Right.
Because we weren't told how it was going to work out. We were just kind of just, hey, just hang in there. It's going to be fine. Everything's going to be taken care of. We're all going to get paid. Yeah, about that. Yeah, we got paid, but not anything near what it should have been.
What about the pay for, say, the video games? You know.
We got dicked, like, royally.
Really?
Yeah, like, royally. we used to get paid pretty well, very well. And then a lot of the guys would use it for their taxes. Now with what we got paid in the last 2 years, no way in hell we can ever come near paying our taxes with that check. But like I said before, like a lot of the guys, we used that check and just basically, it wasn't even for us, Uncle Sam. So we would just kind of take it and just give it right to Uncle Sam. So that money wasn't even for us, honestly. But that's what they would use for the taxes. You can't do that anymore because it's not anywhere near.
So
yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but why do you feel, I mean, I play the WWE video games, okay? So I know that they put out a lot of content. It's DLC content. It's nothing free. It's all, you pay for that stuff. Like last year's 2K14 game, you know, you have the NWO pack. You went for like $8.99 or something like that. Then they have $20 for you to play online. So I'm thinking, like, you guys should be getting a pretty good penny for this because everything on there costs money. And the game is
the
like.
The company is probably.
Yeah, so I guess it's amazing to me. And it's like, you know, it's your likeness on the game.
Well, the first year that we realized we were getting screwed was the year that THQ went under. And that one we understood because as far when we heard that THQ was going under, like we knew like, we're going to get screwed over on the check. So we weren't blaming the company on that one. It was just, that's just, you know, it just happens. So we were expecting to get a little screwed over when it came to the championship on that one. Because like I said, THQ went under. The problem was the following year, which I think it was last year, when we got the check, like, it was pretty crappy. And then, and what happened was there was only like three of us that actually went and complained. I was one of them. From the middle lower card, right? Not the top guys. Because like I said, so long as you keep the top guys happy, you know, like the rest of them can't really bet you complain. So that's basically what happened. Like, I went and I complained. And I was like, hey, dude, what the hell is this? You know, like it's not anywhere near what it should be. Yeah, so basically what went down, like, because there was only like three of us that actually went and said anything, I think the company felt like they can get away with it, which in a sense they did. But yeah, because basically what it was like, if only a few of us kind of go and say anything and the rest just kind of keep their mouth shut and don't say anything, then, you know, because a lot of guys are afraid to speak up. And that's a big issue that's going on right now. People don't speak up. They don't stand up for themselves. I'm a proud son of a gun. Like, I'm a huge, proud son of a gun. And I know my worth. I know what we're worth, and I know what we do, and I know, you know, that we should be compensated for the work. So that was the issue. Like, yeah, the video game check, these last 2 years were horrible. Like I said, the first year I understood because THQ went under and, you know, c'est la vie. But this last year, it was horrible. It was almost disrespectful, just because you were always here. Oh, WWE had, you know, the largest grossing video game of all time and whatever. You looking at your paycheck, you're like, huh? Okay, yeah. Where is it?
Right.
So that was the issue with that.
You know, in general, how does the WWE get away with not really considering their talent employees, but they have the independent contractor status? In terms of, you know, you can work here, you can work for us, we put you on the road, here's your schedule, you know, you go to this autograph signing, whatever, but you can't work anywhere else. You can't even do interviews with anybody else. So
no.
How does WWE get away with that? I mean, they're talking about now a new policy where if you get terminated for disciplinary reasons, you lose your merchandise sales and you're banned from wrestling for a year. I mean, how do they get away with some of the rules that they're setting up?
That's crazy. Actually, that's the first I hear about that. I don't know, man. Like, it's I don't know. I think a lot of it just has to do with people not standing up for themselves. So if they apply to one person and then they don't say anything, I'm just assuming they probably think that they can get away with it with everybody else. I don't know. They were kind to me when it came to my release. They gave me my 90 days paid. Granted, I couldn't do anything. I could wrestle. I was able to do shows, but nothing that was televised. They straight up told me, like, no, you know, no Ring of Honor, no TNA, nothing that's televised, nothing in Mexico. But, you know, they were kind to me because usually how it works is if I leave I'm done. Like, I'm straight out done. Like, I can go work wherever the hell I want, but they won't pay me my 90 days. So the company was very kind to me in that sense. They took care of me for those 90 days when I left, so long as I didn't go anywhere else. Which, in hindsight, AAA had called me about doing their big anniversary show with Del Rio when he left, but because I was still in my 90 days, I couldn't do it. Or at least I didn't want to risk, you know, pissing off the company at the time. But aside from that, like, yeah, if I leave, I'm done. I don't have to do 90 days. I can do whatever, but I don't get paid those 90 days. When you get terminated, you get either 30 or 90. So that's different. But yeah, like I said, they took care of me when it came to that. So I can't say anything negative about that because, like I said, they took care of me. But as far as the other stuff goes, I don't know, man. Like, that's, like I said, that's the first I hear about that. I know there was that issue with Del Rio, which I still don't get why. Like, they wanted to do it 90 days. I know they fixed it. It's all worked out and whatever. But the year thing, I'm sorry. Like, I don't get why. Like, I never understood why. But that's his business. That's, you know, yeah, he's one of my closest friends in real life. But, like, yeah, that's his business. I'm not going to ask him because it's not my business. If he wants to tell me, he'll tell me.
Right.
But aside from that, like, it's his thing. Like, I'm just there as support. He's my friend. So I'm supporting him regardless. But like I said, I'm not going to get into his business because that's a whole another that's a whole can of worms I don't want to get into.
True. Let me ask you this question. The conception of Triple H, as far as, like, fans go, and I'm really talking about fans that are smart to the business, internet fans, is a guy is a complete prick. You know, and, I mean, you've been around Trips. How is Triple H, you know, in real life, other than the character he portrays on TV? Because I think sometimes people get it twisted about Triple H.
We also have to understand, though, the position he's in. We have to understand, like, he is in the top position where, yeah, sometimes he has to be a dick. You know, he has to be because it's business. But, yeah, he made a couple comments sort of towards me and Del Rio a few times, but, I mean, at the time, like, we didn't think anything of it, or at least we just kind of brushed it off, even though, like, you know, they were rude or disrespectful or whatever, you know. But, I mean, he would make some comments sometimes, but they were so stupid that we just kind of, like, brushed it off. He was weird with me sometimes, though, like, because sometimes he would come and be very approachable, and then there's times where he was, like, super cold towards me. And just me, though, and just me, for some reason, he would just be very cold towards me. Where he was just kind of, you know, he'd go shake my hand, but he wasn't even looking at me. He wouldn't make eye contact. Or, like, there was a few times where I remember where we would be walking down the hall and he would see me and he would just kind of turn and go the other way, which I don't get why. But whatever. But I go back now and you know, because hindsight, you know, I understand that, you know, it's business and he has to be a dick sometimes. Say, you know, with Vince, you don't get to that position by being kind, unfortunately. You know, and that's just the way it is, whether it's here in wrestling or any other kind of business. If you're going to be in a top position like that, yeah, sometimes you have to be an asshole. You have to be. Otherwise, people are going to step all over you. So, in a weird way, I get it. I'm trying to be very optimistic and just be very understanding and put myself in people's shoes sometimes, just to better understand why they're doing what they're doing, why they are the way they are. And that's what I have to do with this situation, as to why they were a certain way. And it helps with the understanding.
Yeah, but I respect your answer. But at the same time, I mean, I heard the stories of the guy calling you Bumblebee. And a lot of people didn't get that. I got it. It's, you know, it's really, if it's for what I think it is, the character on The Simpsons, it was a Mexican character on The Simpsons.
And you're right.
That's where that comes from. A lot of people still don't get that, you know, don't get that saying. And I completely got it, you know. So, I mean, it just seems to me that...
It just kind of goes back to the same thing where, you know, the comments that were made that... There's no point in me even dwelling upon it anymore.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, at the time I was upset. I was very upset. But, you know, the more I let it get to me, the worse it is for me.
Right.
Overall. So I have to, it's part of just letting things go and just saying, you know, it's done, it's done. You know, I don't agree with it, but there's no point in me, you know, bitching and moaning about it, because it's only going to make me look bad at the end of the day. So I just got to let it go.
Let me ask you this question. On the shooting review you did with our video, you mentioned a situation where you had been pretty much removed from television. You were doing house shows, and you were starting to help train a lot of talents with tryouts. I mean, I guess you had took William Regal's position. Not really took his position, but just were covering for him while he was out doing something.
Yes.
And then they came to you, the office came to you, and told you that you weren't supposed to be doing it. Can you kind of let the listeners here of the GRP know exactly what you were going through at that time with that? Then you,
that was awkward, man. Yeah. That was just weird. Because when Stryker was there, Matt Stryker, if Regal wasn't there for whatever reason, maybe he's out scouting or he's down at NXT, when Regal wasn't there, it was myself and Matt Stryker running the tryouts before the shows. And a lot of the guys that even... Some of the guys that are even down at NXT right now were guys that I've worked with for the tryouts, or guys that even had, you know, when they sent them down for the camp down here, a lot of guys were guys that I worked with. So I was doing that for like 3 and something years. So then when Stryker left, when they got rid of Stryker, Regal was down in NXT a lot. So he wasn't on the road, or he was out scouting. So he wasn't on the road. So because I had been doing it for so long, I figured, okay, well, Stryker's not here, Regal's not here, who's left from the guys that would help out the tryouts? Myself. I know the speech, you know, I know because I sat in on Regal's speech when he talked to the kids. So I know what he's going to tell them, so I can go and I can tell them. I know what they're looking for in the ring. All I need is I just need a ref and the okay from the office to go and actually start. So I would do that every single time. And then... yeah, after a while, they come up to me, and they're just like, yeah, that's not your job anymore. So in my head, I didn't get why, and I still, to this day, don't get why. They told me not to do it anymore. So I was like, okay, well, that sucks. So for a couple weeks, I wasn't doing it, and I would just see the extras just there, just, you know, twiddling the thumbs because they didn't know what to do because, you know, there's nobody there. Like, Regal wasn't there. Regal was down at NXT, or he was out doing something, you know, for the company. So nobody was going up to the guys and the girls and telling them, hey, go by the ring, or hey, go take your physical. Hey, come over here. Hey, we're going to do this. Nobody was doing that. And then because a lot of those guys that were there were guys that had been there before, they knew that, okay, Regal, myself, Stryker, right? So they don't see Stryker, they don't see Regal, which were the first two that they would have to go to. They would see me. So they would come up to me and approach to me, you know, come up to me and just say, hey, you know, we're here, what do we do? And I would tell them, I was like, listen, guys, that's, you know, not my deal anymore. Just go stand by the ring. Tell the rest of the guys to stand by the ring if in case they need you guys. So one day, they appointed Scott Armstrong to start doing the tryouts, which I always liked Scott Armstrong. I did. But at the time, he was learning how to do the showtime, so he couldn't do the tryouts because he was busy. He was learning how to do showtime, so he was with like Billy Kidman and those guys. So that happened. And then actually before Scott Armstrong, it was they appointed Tensai and they appointed John Cone, which at the time, that was when they were doing the Raw pre-shows, so Tensai was busy, so he couldn't do it. And then John Cone was always running around because he was a he was helping out Mark Carano at Talent Relations. So he was running around doing stuff. So it goes back to square one, you know, of like the guys just standing there not doing anything because they don't know what to do. They don't know where to go or what, you know, what to do. So that's when they told Scott Armstrong to do it, which I go back to the same thing. He was busy during the showtime, so he couldn't do it. And then by the time he was done, you know, the rehearsals were about to start, so the guys couldn't even get in the ring to do their matches. So one day, Carano pulls me into the office, and he's like, hey, can you take the extras, and can you do the matches with them? I was like, yeah, sure. All he told me was, go and check with Scott Armstrong and make sure it's okay with him. I was like, sure. So then I go, and I ask Scott Armstrong. Scott Armstrong was cool with it. I go, and I tell Carano, I was like, hey, Mark, you know, Scotty said it was okay. He's like, okay, cool. Just wait for, you know, I think he said, like, wait for Arn Anderson so he can watch him as well. So whatever, okay, cool. Arn comes, they do the matches, and then they pull me to the office again the following weekend. They're like, I thought we told you it wasn't your job. And that's when I'm just like, what the hell? Like, you guys were the ones that asked me to do it to begin with. Like, I don't get where this is coming from. Why is it a problem now? I've been doing this for so long. Why is it an issue? Like, it never was. Like, yeah, that's not your job anymore. You're not supposed to do it. So, and I was, at that point, I just kind of gave up. I was like, man, like, I don't get it. Like, I do something that you guys ask me to do, you guys get mad. I don't do something, you guys get mad. Like, I don't get it. Like, what do I do? Because I'm doing the Spanish interviews, and then I'm done. Like, I don't have anything to do. And I would usually finish them on Monday so I can get in the ring with the guys on Tuesday. So we would pre-tape the SmackDown ones as well on that Monday for the most part if we had time. I don't get what you guys want. Like, I don't get it. Like, and yeah, it got to that point where I was like, man, I can't, like, what do I do? Yeah, like, I'm coming in, I'm doing the interviews, and then I'm just standing there, not doing anything. And because to me, it was one of those where, like, okay, the way it would work out is it would have the guys, you know, do matches with each other. And then if there was, like, an odd man out or somebody that they liked in particular, Regal would ask me, hey, can you get in there with them and move them around? Because a lot of these guys are amazing talent, you know, and these are top indie guys, too. They would come in, and they're amazing talents within each other because they've worked each other 1,000 times, or they talked about their match beforehand. Whereas when I would come in, I would just call everything in the ring just to see if they can listen. Or I would kind of mess with their mind a little bit where I would tell them, you know, before we got in, hey, you're a good guy. And then we get in there, and I would switch it on them, hey, you're a bad guy now. Just to see if they can adapt without them freaking out. Because that's what happens with WWE a lot. Hey, we have 10 minutes. Okay, now you're up there. And like, oh, no, you have 6 now. And then you're halfway in there, and then they're like 7. So you have to learn how to adapt because of whatever reason, you know, commercials or promo went too long or promo went too short. So learning how to listen is very important. So that's what I was doing. And, yeah, like I said, they just told me not to do it anymore. It wasn't my job. And in my mind, I'm thinking to myself, well, you're not paying me extra to do it, so it's not taking me a job. Like, I'm just doing it because I want to get in the ring and I want to wrestle. So that's kind of what happened with that, which is so confusing. And to this day, I still don't know why.
And then you were training at one point also, you were training or you were helping the divas, helping the ladies. And then
some of the girls and some of the guys. Like, I was helping everybody. Like, whoever asked for help, like, I would get in there. You know, Titus O'Neil, Ryback, you know, Fox, Naomi. Naomi's one of my favorite. The Usos, you know, if they ever needed help with something, you know, I was the one that would get in there with. They would ask me, hey, can you come in there and, you know, just roll around with me so we can, you know, figure something out. So I was always happy to do it. Always happy to do it. Whenever some of the guys from NXT would come up, you know, I would get in there. I would tell them, hey, get in the ring with me. Just so the office can see you because, yeah, they might know who you are from name, but I don't know if they even know that what you can do or how you can move or if you can work. So we would just get in and roll around, just move around a little bit. Just because it helps me out to just get in the ring. Yeah, like I was happy to be in the ring. And it helps the other guy because it allows the agents to see them in the ring and them actually move. As opposed to, hey, who's that guy over there? Oh, he's from NXT. Oh, okay, that's cool. Can it work? Yeah. Now they're seeing them move and they're seeing them roll around and, you know, the footwork, which is very important. And then now they have an idea, okay, he can do this. Or, you know, he needs work on this. Let's work on him with this one or with whatever. So, yeah, I was helping out whoever asked for help. I would always get in there with them, and I was happy to do it.
Might be a good idea for the writers to be required to watch NXT.
definitely.
Well, I mean, they have their own network, so.
Yeah. Well, see, here's the thing, though. Like, there's something that I do appreciate with WWE, and that's learning how to work the cameras. I appreciate how they do it and like, the pauses, when to pause, when to slow down, when to pick it up. That's something that, like, the guys on NXT are learning. They're learning how to do that. Because down there, down here, like, they'll teach you, like, the basics. But I don't want to say they won't. I'm just saying, let me find a way to put it. the teaching of the cameras is a whole lot different world up there than it is down at NXT. Like, how to work the cameras, that's very important. You know, Cena's good at it. Obviously, Randy, you know, like, Del Rio was good at working the cameras. When to pause, when to do something and slow down so that the cameras can pick it up. As opposed to down at NXT, yeah, they're putting these awesome matches, but the working of the cameras is something that a lot of the guys still need to work with from the very little that I saw back when I was there, is the working of the cameras.
You know, we've talked a lot about Triple H and Vince McMahon. Can you talk a little bit about your relationship, if you had one, with Stephanie McMahon, and what are her duties backstage at WWE events?
You know what? I don't exactly know her official title as far as like backstage stuff goes. She was always very supportive of the guys, and you know, she was always with Hunter, and then she would do more stuff backstage during like before the show. So I didn't get the chance to see much of it. Once the show starts, she's sitting next to Vince, and she's kind of learning, you know, that kind of stuff. She's learning basically what Vince does. So I'm not exactly sure what her official role backstage is. So I don't know. She was always super kind to us. And I've mentioned the story at the RF video one where I learned the hard way not to speak Spanish in front of her because she speaks Spanish. I didn't know that.
Wow.
So myself and Alberto were just, you know, me and Alberto were just, thankfully it wasn't anything bad. But me and Alberto were just talking in the back in Spanish because we talked to each other in Spanish. And then she kind of comes in and just kind of, you know, But it caught us so off guard that we were just kind of looking at each other and looking at her, and she just smiles and walks away, and we're like, holy shit, don't speak Spanish in front of her. So, she understands. She understands Spanish. So we learned that one the hard way. But like I said, thankfully it wasn't anything bad or anything that would get us in trouble. But yeah, we learned the hard way not to speak Spanish in front of her.
Wow.
What was your reaction when ring announcer Justin Roberts was released from the company?
That was weird. I was not expecting that at all, honestly. Just because obviously he's been there for so long, and in a weird way, it's always fearful when somebody else comes in to do something similar. You know, so they had, you know, I think Eden was doing like Superstars, I think, or SmackDown, right? So when she came in, like, and she's a sweetheart, like, I like her a lot. She's super cool. But I would always be fearful when somebody else comes in to do something similar than what you're doing. Because obviously they have to make room. So whether it was him or even Lillian, I don't know. Somebody had to go. So, I was very surprised. I was very, very surprised when they let him go. I was not expecting that at all. Especially for how long he's been there.
Yeah, how long he's been there, and his type of announcing. I mean, the guy made the matches feel very important when he would be out there announcing.
Oh, definitely. Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely. Same thing when they got let go of Mark Eaton, you know, the timekeeper.
Right.
Like that was very surprising when they brought in Berkeley. And Berkeley's a good kid too. But like I said, you should always kind of be a little weary when somebody else comes in to do something similar than what you're doing.
Since leaving WWE, have you had any feelers from TNA? I know you're down in Orlando right now. And just your thoughts on possibly working for another company like TNA.
I would not be opposed to it at all. Like, they have not contacted me personally about it. I've been contacted by the Lucha Underground guys. So I'm kind of working on that, about possibly doing Lucha Underground soon. So I did that, and like I got to do AAA not so long ago, so that was awesome. I would love to Ring of Honor one of these days. I would love to, especially not only just as a wrestler, but as a fan. Like, I would love to do Ring of Honor one day. So who knows? Who knows? I got some stuff coming up, but I don't want to jinx it yet. I don't want to put it out there and then have it not come out, you know, come to fruition. So I'm just kind of going to keep my mouth shut for a bit. Until it's actually a done deal. So I got a couple things, you know, in the works. But, like I said, I've talked to Leech Underground, so working on that. If it happens, that'd be awesome. I would love to go back to L.A. and do some Leech Underground with some of the guys that I basically started my wrestling career with. So we'll see. But TNA, not directly, no.
What was your reaction when they ended the Undertaker's WrestleMania streak?
I wasn't commentary for that. I honestly thought that Undertaker forgot to kick out. That was my initial reaction. And I looked at Carlos Cabrera next to me, and then Marcelo, and I was just like, "What just happened?" And he's like, in Spanish, he's like, "Take it off." I was like, "What?" So I honestly thought that Taker forgot to kick out. That was my initial reaction. I was so shocked. I was not expecting that at all. And then just how quiet it went. And what was cool in a weird way was they didn't play Lesnar's music, or they didn't show the 21-1 or whatever. They didn't show that. They didn't play the music right off the bat. They waited a minute before they even played it.
Right.
So that was such a very eerie feeling. That was my initial reaction. I thought Taker forgot to kick out.
Let me ask you this question. Del Rio won the 2011 Royal Rumble. Was the 40-man Royal Rumble is what they touted it as. Yes. And then he went on to face Edge. WrestleMania for the World Heavyweight Championship. Now, how did you guys feel knowing that your match was going to go on as early as it did? I believe it might have been the first match on the card.
It was the first match, yeah. Honestly, we didn't mind because obviously the crowd is fresh.
Right.
So that's not a bad position to be in, to be first, because the crowd is fresh. They're so full of energy. In wrestling, there's certain matches you want to be a part of. It's either you don't want to be semi. Semi is basically just the filler match, just whatever. So the first match, the match before intermission, and the main event. Those are the three that you basically want to be in, because right before intermission, they're very pumped, they're excited. Now they have a break, so okay, they're gonna go buy your merch, right? So that's the intermission, the one before intermission. Obviously, main event because it's the event, and then the first match because of fresh. So in a weird way, those are the three matches you would be a part of. The first match, the one before the mission, and the main event. So I honestly didn't mind. I thought it was kind of cool, and then I mentioned this. I thought it was kind of cool that the first, aside from The Rock, we opened up the show. So that is awesome. So WrestleMania 27? Yeah, 27. We opened up the show, aside from The Rock. So that's awesome.
Yeah, cool. What were your thoughts when you heard about the incident with Alberto Del Rio? Backstage with the social media manager, and then his subsequent release from the company.
When I first heard about it, obviously, like I said, he's a very close friend of mine, so I called him and I was like, "Hey, you okay? Are you all right?" And like I said, I know, because when I left the first day and a half or whatever, I didn't want to talk to anybody, so I know that feeling. So mine was a little different than his, but for that day and a half, I would get texts from people "Oh, hey, you okay? In my mind, I don't want to talk to anybody. I just want to spend time to myself. I don't want to talk to anybody. So when I hit up the reels, I was like, "Dude, if you need to talk, you can always just, we can talk. I'm going to leave you alone just because I know the feeling. I'm going to leave you alone and, spend time with your family. But if you want to talk, I'm here. You're my friend." So I was shocked, man. I was just shocked when I heard about it. But then I realized, him and Triple H have had, they've butted heads in the past. I wasn't too surprised. It was that initial shock. And then once, things kind of settled down, you're like, yeah, okay. It was some kind of vendetta, probably. I don't know. But, it was crappy. It was very crappy. And I think unfair, because I think there was a similar situation the year prior, with another social media guy, and I think it was a Big Show.
Right, right.
And then, that went down into whatever. It was crappy.
What was your guys' reaction when CM Punk left at the Royal Rumble? He went home. I guess he really kept a low profile, wasn't talking to a lot of the boys. And I think a lot of people didn't know exactly what had happened and why he went home. What was kind of the backstage reaction to CM Punk, one of the bigger stars in the company, just ultimately, after that pay-per-view, just going home?
I think a lot of it had to do with who you asked at. I didn't know exactly what was going on. I had gotten wind of what the deal was, that he basically told the company to, buzz off. So we had gotten wind about that. But because the company never told us anything, we didn't know anything. or we didn't know the facts. It was just, you know, he said, she said. So we weren't sure what was going on. Like, at first, obviously, you know, you have that initial thought of, oh, it's a work. It's all, you know, it's our storyline. But, like, once we realized, oh, hey, this is for real. from what I had heard, and just because, like, I go back to the same thing, like, I will stand up for myself. And I'm a proud dude. Like, I'm a proud guy. So when we heard that that Punk was doing the same thing, he stood up to the company and he basically told him to buzz off. A certain part of me was like, yeah, why not? You know, he's a grown-ass man. Like, he's an adult. Like, you know, you can't treat as a kid. Even does something wreck like it.
Yeah.
It's hard, you know, you can't treat a person that way. We're adults. Especially when it comes to, like, the financial stuff. So that, because now you're not just affecting the person, you're affecting the person's family. And that's a whole other world. That's a whole other situation. You know, you can mess with me, and they did. You know, you can mess with me all you want, but, like, the moment you start affecting my family, that's no. So a certain part of us, you know, was proud that, you know, Punk did that. Stood up to the giant. It sucks the way it went down, unfortunately, but that's the way the thing goes sometimes.
You know, going back to, you were talking about your weight and being tested under the wellness policy, and certainly the wellness policy gets a lot of criticism. Just in general, how often were you tested? Was it random? Were the bigger stars tested? And do you fully understand what the wellness policy is? It seems like they were always changing the policy, and there was the notion that, say, Randy Orton had two strikes, but somehow he had one forgiven. And it seems like when they do announce a wellness strike, it's usually the lower tier guys. So I guess just in general, what's your overall feeling on the wellness policy in WWE?
Man, you know what? So they say it's random. I call bull on it. Yeah, it's total BS. Because I remember there was once where I was tested 3 times in 2 weeks. But this is before I even, like, I had my incident. This is way before. So there's no way in hell my name came up. Out of 70 plus guys, they would only pick maybe five, good 10, 12 guys, you know, every time they would test. There's no way in hell my name came up 3 times in 2 weeks. You know, no way in hell. That's not random. And if it is, that's a hell of a coincidence. But
yes, you should play a lottery.
Obviously, yeah. But yeah, I mean, honestly, like I never thought that witch hunt that they went on, because there was this time where, like, every month somebody popped for something. And it wasn't even anything crazy. It was maybe some kind of the workout stuff. I think there was a time where they ended up changing where we couldn't take pre-workout stuff. And I think something had happened down at NXT. I think that's what had happened. Somebody was taking some pre-workout stuff and then they ended up drinking, like, a Red Bull. I think that's what I heard. So they ended up banning pre-workout stuff, certain kinds. So I call BS on that being random. Yeah, it was constantly changing. There is a lot of stuff. I remember we had a meeting once where they told us that there was some these vitamins that had I think it was like bat in it, and we couldn't take it because there was some chemical in it that could kill us or something. I was like, that's dumb. They would tell us about these drugs that I didn't even know existed, and they would tell us you can't take this; it's illegal. In my mind, I'm thinking, I'm like, well, I've never heard of it, but the way you make it seem, man, you make it seem like it's fun. But I didn't get it. Like, I didn't get which one that they went on. And then I wasn't too fond of the idea of posting or making it public. I was never fond of that idea. Because you're affecting your own stock, you're affecting your own company by posting, you know, monthly, hey, this guy popped, he's suspended for 30 days, this guy's suspended for 60 days. You're affecting your products, you're affecting your own company. Why would you give your own company that reputation or that image? Why? So, yeah, that was just my thing. Like, I was never fond of the idea of making it public.
Well, that was the whole criticism. It's a PR stunt. So then they have to announce occasionally that so-and-so is tested positive and they're suspended. So that's the major criticism, is people just kind of view it as, they do it so that they can satisfy their shareholders and the public when it doesn't appear that it's a serious test. I mean, if you're tested three times in 2 weeks, you know, how often is Triple H tested, or how often is Ryback tested? Right.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and then like after once I came back from my suspension, I was tested every month. Like every month I was tested. And then yeah, granted, when you get suspended, they tell you, hey, for the next year, the next 6 months, we're going to test you every month. Well, that's fine, whatever. I'm clean. But yeah, like I said, I was just never fond of the idea of making it public because, like I said, it's affecting your own stock, it's affecting your own company.
What are your thoughts after the? Actually, I have two questions for you. First one is, what was your thoughts on Sting finally coming over to the WWE? And my second question for you is, what are your thoughts on the Macho Man Randy Savage finally taking his rightful spot in the WWE Hall of Fame?
Awesome to both. Awesome to both. The Randy Savage is long overdue. The legend that you know he left behind is you know it's immense and it's incredible and it's very very long overdue. I actually just heard about it yesterday too. Was it yesterday that it was announced?
Yeah.
It was. Yeah. So I just heard about it. So that's great. I never really actually saw a lot of WCW, so I'm not too familiar on the fan base of Sting as far as like. I wasn't watching when he was like the top dog in WCW. I saw him in TNA a couple of times, but by then like I had gotten out of that the fan mode and I was already into the wrestling mode. So like I didn't get a chance to appreciate Sting during his top moments in WCW or back in the day. I mean, obviously he's a legend in himself. So like you know it's great that he's finally in WWE because that's something I don't think a lot of people ever expected. Especially coming, you know, fresh off of TNA.
Right.
So it's good. It's great to have Sting. I don't know, like, if he's done anything after, what was it, like, a pay-per-view?
Yeah, it was at Survivor Series he came.
Okay, yeah. So, like I said, I haven't been watching, so I don't know. So I don't know if he's come back and done anything yet. If he leads into something at WrestleMania, that'd be awesome to have Sting at Mania, because that's another thing I don't think people ever expected to happen.
Right.
So that's great. That's great to have Sting on board with the company, and it's great to have Macho Man finally, because it's long overdue.
And my final question to you is going to be: do you see yourself or Alberto ever returning to the WWE? And are we going to ever see you two reunite? Maybe on maybe possibly in a TNA or a Ring of Honor type situation.
Well, I mean, myself and Alberto have done stuff together already. Like we did AAA together, so that was great. We've done random shows here and there. We did the House of Hardcore, Tommy Dreamer's House of Hardcore in Philly a couple months back. So we did that together. So that was great. We have a couple of things coming up together as well. We have England coming up. We have Australia coming up together. We have some stuff here in the States as well. So and we both know that here in this crazy business that we're in wrestling. You can never say never. So the possibility of ever going back to WWE is not one that's, you know, far-fetched. It's a possibility under different circumstances, probably, but it's possible. So like, I think a lot of it, for the meantime, I think myself and him, we're doing pretty well on our own at the moment. And then down the line, who knows? We might get back together in WWE. We might come back separately. Who knows? It's just a matter of waiting.
I got a couple more for you, real quick. Where do you think Rey Mysterio ultimately ends up? Do you think eventually he'll go to AAA full time, or do you still think he'll stay with WWE?
I have it in good faith that I know he wants out, so I would not rule out the possibility of him going full time with AAA, or at least on a part time schedule with AAA. So I know that's been a home of his down in Mexico for years since, you know, when he started back in the 90s. So it's a possibility. I love Ray. Like, he's always been so courteous and so kind to myself and Alberto. So, I would not rule out the possibility of him going to AAA.
And a lot of people talk about the rating now in WWE. You know, it's a PG show. It's definitely more cartoonish. It's really geared for the 13-year-olds. And a lot of criticism of, you know, WWE is not really clicking with some of the older fans. Do you think that rating, that content that they're gearing towards the younger crowd is really hurting WWE overall?
yes or no. We also have to understand who the main target is. It's the kids. They're the ones that are going to sucker in the parents and taking them to shows. They're the ones that are going to be buying all the merch. And then as far as the older crowd, the fans are going to watch. The fans that are fans are going to keep watching. They might bitch and complain, but they're going to keep watching. The main target are the kids, because that's where the money's going to have to come in, because, you know, Junior wants to go to Raw or SmackDown, and, you know, all he has to do is beg and moan to Daddy, and Daddy's going to take him, you know? And then, oh, they're at the show. Hey, Juju wants a John Cena shirt, or he wants a whatever shirt, or he wants a hat, or whatever. Daddy, you know, and Daddy's going to fork it over. So that's where the target is. It's a weird complex that they have right now, because it's PG, but they want it to be as aggressive as possible. Like when we were there, they wanted you to be aggressive. They wanted you to be snug. They're obviously safe, you know, safe, but like they wanted you to be snug and tight. They want to make it look as realistic as possible. Even though we're in a professional wrestling world, they want to look as close to MMA in a sense as possible, despite the fact that you're PG. You can't curse, you can't do anything to the head. But, you know, it's that weird complex that they have when it comes to that. But, yeah, I mean, it's the market are the kids. That's where you're going to make your money. And you have more investors. If you're PG, because you can appeal to a much broader audience than just the internet fans. The internet fans are going to keep watching, even though they're going to pitch and complain. They're going to still watch. The target, and you can sell more to the sponsors is if you cater to the kids.
You know, I'm going to say this real quick. I agree with you on that. If you cater to the children, you get more sponsors like they have with, you know, Mattel and Kmart and all that. I get that, but little Johnny is not going to order the WWE Network. It's going to be the...
Right, no, right.
Yeah, it's going to be the hardcore.
And check this out. This is what I wanted to get to, like, when we were talking before we went on.
Yeah.
The ones that complain the most online are the ones that do not pay for Jack. They don't pay squat. They don't go and buy the shirts. They don't go and buy the pay-per-views. They're the ones asking on Twitter, hey, does anybody have the stream to the pay-per-view? But they're going to be bitching the whole time through. Like those, I've noticed that, especially recently, just reading people's comments, you know, like on Twitter. Oh, this is the worst pay-per-view ever. Well, you didn't even pay for it. Like,
right.
You're streaming it from somebody's, you know, account. Are you the ones paying for, you know, for the merch? No, you're not. But you'll go and you'll spend, you know, $20 on a show that's an indie show, which is great. Support indie wrestling. I'm all for that. But if you're not paying for a product, in a weird mess of way, you shouldn't be complaining about it because you're not even paying for it.
I get that part. But also, you have to look at the same person that's not paying, but they're paying for an indie show. Well, there could be, because also WWE makes the person. I mean, the one thing that I believe, and like a lot of other people believe too, is the way to affect WWE's way of business is to affect their wallet. When you start not paying for their product, I get your point of, you know, if you're not paying for the network, then you shouldn't be bitching and complaining about anything. I get that part. But it's also, you have to look at why this person stopped paying for the product, why this person got turned off. I mean, you have to look at back during Monday Night War. We had all these wrestling fans that used to watch the WCW, used to watch WWF, and it was a lot more popular than it is now. Where did all these people go, you know?
Right. And I think a lot of it also has to do with there's no competition.
True.
There's no competition for WWE. There really isn't. So I think maybe that has a lot to do with it as well, that there's no competition, so there's no need in a sense to even force something in, if that makes sense. They have no need for it. So they can just keep the product that they have now, and the people are still going to watch. But because there's no alternative.
Sure.
What's your overall opinion? I don't know if you get a chance to watch it very often, but what's your overall opinion of the WWE Network? I don't know if you're subscribing to it now. I know for a time they let the talent get on for free. Do you think it's delivering the content that fans want to watch? I mean, we talk about it here on our show as... You know, a lot of the Raws are missing. A lot of the Nitros are missing. Some of the pay-per-views have sizable edits. The music, the question about, you know, musical edits, and a lot of the original music is missing from the broadcast. Do you think the content overall is kind of delivering what what wrestling fans in general want to see right now?
Well, like I said earlier, like on paper, it's great. Like the idea that you have everything, you know, at your fingertips is great. I, on the other hand, I have an account. I haven't been on it. So my account is just sitting there. So I haven't been on it. I think the last time I was on it was when we saw SummerSlam. I think that's the only pay-per-view that I've seen since. Yeah. And that was the only time I was on the network. Obviously, because it's in L.A., you know, like that's my hometown. But I haven't been on it, so I don't know. I don't know as far as, like, the edits, all that stuff. I have no clue. Like I said, the actual idea of having everything disposable or just there at your fingertips is great. But I can't go into it because I don't know.
What did you think when they ended the brand extension between Raw and SmackDown?
It was coming because they were constantly... So, like, I saw that coming. And I kind of miss it sometimes because it was a cool little concept of separating. Because what had happened was if you go to Raw and you see everybody, why would you want to go to SmackDown and only see half of the guys? Or you can go to Raw and watch everyone. You know, so that, once you started mixing the guys, that's when things started kind of like dying out a little bit. But other than that, like, I enjoyed it. I had fun with it. Because we were one group, and then they had the other group. And then SmackDown was always so much more fun than Raw, because it was more laid back.
What was your WWE highlight? What was the best moment or best event? Or if one thing stands out to you, like that was the best memory I have of my WWE experience, what would it be?
I think I have three. I think, no, yeah, four. Obviously, my first Mania. That was awesome. That just... up there. That's definitely up there. My first Mania. Just the feeling of being out there and realizing, just thinking to myself, a year before that in Arizona, there I was at Mania as a fan. Now I'm here opening up WrestleMania in Atlanta. So that in itself was incredible. Definitely that. When I came out of the Rumble, that was so much fun. The Rumble appearance was fun. Getting thrown off the ladder at TLC in Baltimore. That was one I reveled. And I think I'll probably either of those three. Yeah, Mania, the Rumble, okay. And TLC.
And then one more. Give us a good road story. I mean, we always hear about, you know, guys getting ribbed, or you get ribbed, or or, you know, those long road trips in the car and people telling stories. Or can you give us just one good road story from your experience?
Let me see. This is cool, but I gotta keep it PG-ish. Ish. Because we would do so much stupid stuff to each other, but I can't share. One of us will get in trouble. Another is one where we used to, and then he would always mess with us as well, like Scar Humshong. We would mess with him a lot. And then he would mess with us back. We were in Mexico, and then we ended up photoshopping. We took a picture. Two guys, you know, they were basically naked. They were just hugging each other. And we photoshopped a picture of his face and a picture of one of the other refs together. And we were, blah, blah, blah. And I was on the outside, so I had the paper, like, tucked into my pocket. And there was a point where they started doing the falsies. It was Del Rio and Sheamus. We started doing the fall. As Scott Armstrong goes to the count, I take the paper and it just happened to it flipped, but it flipped right in front of him. So he's counting, he sees the picture and he's telling me he's two guys hugging each other and then with the face in Photoshop. And then he just looks at us and says, "You mother." so we ended up taking so many of those pictures. Yeah, we went to the locker room, in the locker room in one of his matches. So when he comes to the back, he just to the locker room. So he's like, "You know what the fuck?" We ended up going on the bus because we had a bus. We ended up going on the bus and we started putting him on all the seats.
Oh.
So he was livid. He was livid the whole time. But, you know, all in good fun. And then he got me back because he took my wallet one day as we went to security. So, and then this is Mexico. They took my wallet. I think it was between him. I think like, it was a Big Show was kind of blocking me, so I couldn't see. And I think Scotty, who took the wallet, I think that's what it was. I'm trying not to sell it. I'm trying not to freak out, because the moment you start selling it, that's when they mess with things before. And I'm like, something security took my wallet. So I went to the them, hey, somebody took my wallet. I think it was one of you guys. Can get back. No, it wasn't us. So I'm freaking out. I'm like, damn it, I'm in Mexico. Thankfully, I still have my passport. So if anything, I could still get into the country because I have my passport. ended up, they took my wallet, just kind of get back at me. But it was all good fun. It was all good fun. There's, like I said, I have a lot. There's a lot of stuff I can't even share. I don't want to incriminate anybody.
I can definitely understand that. Now, as we wrap with him, we do appreciate your time. This has been a very great, candid interview today. We definitely appreciate everything you've given us today. In closing, can you plug your upcoming dates, appearances that you're going to make,
sure.
Your social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram? Because obviously, when you're a personality that had been in the WWE, there's a lot of fake accounts out there as well.
Yes.
So, plug the social media that you're on, and just kind of any last general message you have for the fans out there.
Obviously, thank you everyone for support after my departure from the company, and also while I was there. Twitter is actually our WWE still until I figure out a way to contact the verified account, so they have to take away my boot mark so I can finally change it. And then my Instagram is J_Rodriguez818. I have this weekend on Friday, I will be at ECW in San Jose, California. On Saturday, I'll be at a pro in Santa Maria, California. On Sunday, I'll be in Indio, California for AEW. The following weekend, I will be in Puerto Rico for Carlos Colon's WWC on Saturday and Sunday. January 8th, I believe, I'll be at WrestleForce in the Carolinas. In March, I believe 13th, I'll be in England, 14th, I believe it was the 14th, the 14th in Germany, fly home for like a day and a half, and then I fly off to Australia for Outback Championship Wrestling, and then All Action Wrestling in Australia. So I got a lot of stuff coming out. Obviously, if you can, keep following through Twitter. I'll do my best. I usually do answer to people. I just don't post it on their timeline. I'll DM them. So, yeah, but most importantly, thank you for all support. It's been a fun couple of years here in wrestling. I got 8 years in me, and I got many more to go.
Well, thank you very much. Frank D and I have definitely enjoyed this interview. And I know this probably sounds corny, but we do wish you the best of luck in future endeavors.
Thank you.